quick introduction to today's episode with my guest, Chris Gethin. This is one of these episodes, for those of you who follow Chris, he's just, the man's a machine. And the first, you'll see a pause for the first 2 minutes in this podcast, because Chris has listened to episodes of this podcast, he follows it, and he's like, it's an honor to be on the podcast. And I'm like, I've been following you for, like, fangirl moment. I'm like, I've been following you for 10 years. So that's literally how this episode starts. So Chris Gethin, founder of the DTP training method, former champion natural bodybuilder, transformation specialist, and his most recent adventure is documenting his journey from bodybuilder to Ironman triathlete. So an Ironman distance, for anyone unfamiliar with that, I need to write this down. This is the third time now I've had Ironman on. I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is the distance. I am 2.2 mile swim, a 112 mile cycle, and a 26 mile run, which is a marathon to finish. So an Ironman distance triathlon. Also the DTP training method. I'm going to explain this before I talk a little bit more about this episode, is the dramatic transformation program principle. This is something that I've been following myself for years. I started doing it in 2012 when I first followed Chris's 12-week muscle builder program, and is actually the training protocol I used to train for Marathon de Saab in 2018, and when I was running through the Arctic in February 2019. This is what I used to do on squats and lunges and variations of leg exercises to pre-fatigue my legs before runs. So it's a volume, pyramid volume training where you do 50 reps, you rest for a minute to 90 seconds, 40 reps, 30 reps, 20 reps, 10, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. So it's like a bell curve of, or like a shoe hook or a horse hook on pyramids. So it starts high, goes down to 10 reps, and then back up to 50. And you gradually increase the weight as you decrease the reps. It's brutal. Like, it is a disgusting training protocol. But it's something that I've used to both, on both the Sahara and the Arctic over the last 2 years. So in today's episode, we talk a little bit about Chris's background, what got him into fitness first, and talking about his journey over the years from being a fitness writer and photographer in Muscle Beach in Venice, California, to Boise, Idaho, where he is now, where he's still documenting his journeys, the Man of Iron being the most recent. So trying to preserve, and actually he built muscle in the preparation for his Ironman triathlon. He's written his book, Man of Iron, which I highly recommend. I absolutely loved this book. I read it and finished it over a weekend, and it's documented on YouTube, the entire journey where he documented it week on week. So today's episode focuses around that. We talk all things bodybuilding, Ironman training, what Chris did with his nutrition, with his training, with his supplementation, with his sleep, his on-race or in-race protocol, and everything in between. So this is one I loved. Like, I'm like, I got to talk to Chris for another 3 hours. So I hope you all enjoy it as much as I enjoyed recording it. Today's episode with the Man of Iron, Chris Gethin. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am delighted to be joined today with my guest, Chris Gethin. Chris is a transformation specialist, entrepreneur, bodybuilder, and Ironman triathlete. Chris is somebody that I've been personally following for years, ever since going through his bodybuilding.com 12-week muscle building trainer way back in 2012. He is the author of many books, including the number one bestseller, Body by Design, The Transformer, and most recently, The Incredible Man of Iron, a book that documents his journey as a world-class bodybuilder to become an Ironman triathlete. Chris is also the founder of DTP Training Method, director and co-founder of Gethin Gyms, and the CEO of the supplement brand Caged Muscle, which has become one of the highest rated and reviewed supplement companies in the world. I can't wait to talk all things bodybuilding, Ironman triathlon, and fitness in today's episode. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me on, Brian. I appreciate it. And like I said before, I appreciate your patience with me getting this time zone right with you. So and I've listened to your podcast for quite a while, so it's quite the honor that I'm actually on it now.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. As I said, it's funny, we actually met Chris back in I think it must have been 2012 at this stage, at the Body Power Expo, back in those days when I was kind of heavy in the bodybuilding scene. I remember chatting to you about your DTP workout, which is something I still do. Absolutely disgusting style of workout, but it's incredible.
Well, I love the term that you use, deadly. It's kind of deadly, isn't it?
That's the only word I can use for it. It's for anyone on the podcast that's been following my Instagram stories. Chris, just to let you know, like I run ultra marathons now. So I ran through the Arctic in 230 kilometers through the Arctic in February, and I used your DTP method on my leg training to build my endurance in my legs. So yeah, for everyone that was wondering where that workout came from, that's directly from Chris.
Wow, that is awesome. You said 230 Ks?
Yeah, yeah. It was over 5 days through the Arctic Circle line. It was, it was cold.
Wow. I assume that you've got a podcast on that, because you'll have to put a link to that one, because I need to check that out.
Oh, 100%. I did a podcast as soon as I got back with all my fingers and toes. But Chris, tell everybody listening, I know your backstory. I've been following your stuff for years. You're one of my go-to people when it comes to all things muscle building, and now all things Ironman. But can you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, where you are now, and a little bit of your background into what got you into first? You can kind of start wherever you feel most comfortable with.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm from Wales originally, born and bred there on a farm up until my 20s, basically. And I was racing motocross from a very, very, very young age. And that was pretty much where a lot of my weekends were taken up, and evenings, because I had no interest in school whatsoever. I couldn't retain the content in school, so I didn't have any interest in that. And it wasn't until I was about 19, 20 years old, I'd started getting a few more injuries from the motocross, but it is namely my back that caused me a lot of issues, a curvature of my spine. So when I retired from motocross, I decided to get into bodybuilding. And when I say after a while, is a few years of just doing drugs and drinking alcohol, because I needed to get that adrenaline fix from somewhere. And unfortunately, I was getting it from the wrong places. And it wasn't until I had physio through resistance training that I was alleviated from a lot of the discomfort that I had in my back. So then I decided to kind of take up weight training, because it made me feel better. And it pulled me away from alcohol, because now I was retaining the content that I was studying and realizing that I needed to eat better to fulfill this purpose. So I decided about a year and a half after picking up a weight, I decided to compete in a bodybuilding show in Pontypridd in Wales, and got second there, even though it wasn't a tested show. I had no idea there was such a thing as natural and untested shows. I kind of got hooked on that then, and continued to bodybuild from there on. And then I went to college to study international health and sports therapy, which was my ticket out of Wales, really, because I needed to get away from the social circle that was very enticing to me, and that was partying. You know, the rave scene had got big within the early 90s, and I was a part of that. And so then I went overseas to work on cruise liners as a massage therapist, because I had those qualifications. And after 8 months of that, I decided to move to Australia and give personal training a go over there, which I was quite successful at. And within a couple of years, had my own gym over there. And then I wanted to reach more people. So I started writing content after I taught myself journalism from Merriam-Webster's book, and started submitting content until it started actually getting published. And then I really, really enjoyed that. So I decided to give up everything and take the risk by selling up and moving to Venice, California, and submitting content to the big publications over there. You know, we think about it. This is back in 2004, 2003. You know, the magazines are still doing very, very well then. And in 2005, I got a publication contract, as a writer and a photographer, because I taught myself photography with WIDA Publications. So that kind of got me set up there within the journalistic industry. A couple of years after that, I started my own magazine, which is called Caged Muscle, because I was really into MMA and bodybuilding. So I combined both of those. And during this time, I'm still competing, by the way. I'm still competing in natural bodybuilding shows that I found now, both in Australia, then when I moved into the US, and then when I started qualifying to compete on a world stage through the WNSO, their world championships were held in Canada. So I was competing up in Canada in the world titles. And then from there, I moved to Boise, Idaho, because bodybuilding.com wanted an editor-in-chief. And I interviewed for that and got that position. So that moved me away from LA, from Venice, California, to Boise, Idaho, which is beautiful for me, because being a country boy and just loving the outdoors and not being very good up close with a lot of people, it's very, very suitable for me. I like the outdoors. So that's where I find myself now.
Yeah, it's I've seen from, and I'm going to link these all up in the show notes, from all your videos, particularly the Man of Iron series, when you're showing like the outdoors around Boise there, it's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. You've got a green belt here. You can float down a river. You've got whitewater rafting 30 minutes up the road. You've got a ski resort that you can go to after work. You know, you can go snowboard until 10 o'clock at night. And then another 30 minutes up the road, you got hot springs. You know, you just got hundreds of miles of trails right outside your door. And being an ultra marathoner, you would absolutely love it up here, Brian. You know, you can just go into the forestry, into the woods, and, perform some active meditation.
Yeah, it's the best way of doing it. Chris, I want to focus in on the Man of Iron story, just because it was, I think I said it just before we went on air, like the Man of Iron book that you wrote, I went through it at a weekend. I started it on a Saturday morning and I had it finished by Sunday night. I couldn't put it down. There's so much in here on the story. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Chris and what he looks like he's jacked. He's literally, think of a bodybuilder. Now picture him doing an Ironman distance triathlon, and that's the book. It's from start to finish, and I watched the whole series on YouTube, that bodybuilding.com. I think it was them that recorded it, but I watched it through YouTube. I'll link it in the description. What put that idea in your head of deciding that as a bodybuilder and as somebody with that background, or as someone who's been, people recognize you for that, what put the idea of an Ironman in your head?
Well, think of a dog that doesn't get walked. You know, it gets very depressed and it gets down pretty quick. And that's kind of me. Unless I get my AA batteries of exercise every single day, I'm not a good person to be around. I can be anxious. I can be on the edge. And so I've always done cardio every day, sometimes twice a day. And, you know, when working with clients and a lot of other people, and I worked with coaches as well, and let's say cardio is not good for bodybuilding. And I'd always argue that, because I found that if I wasn't to do some form of cardio, I could only train maybe 4 or 5 days a week with my intensity. But if I did cardio every day, I could train 5 or 6 days a week and recover fine. You know, mentally, I can train every day. That's not a problem. I do overtrain every now and again, especially when I travel. So I thought, okay, all these people that are arguing it, I'm going to prove them wrong, because I did try to explain that with better blood flow, you're carrying nutrients around the body, the heart is pumping better, you're thinning your blood, and you're going to better recover those localized areas that you're obliterating in the gym. But a lot of people didn't, you know, want to believe that. Of course, if you're an IFBB pro and you're trying to step upon the Mr. Olympia stage, then maybe you wouldn't do the amount of cardio that I'm doing. But I think you still should do a form of low-level activity every single day. So I decided I will take it to the extreme to prove my point and compete in an Ironman triathlon. Because I thought, well, running, I would probably just get too bored doing that. Swimming, too bored. Cycling, too bored. However, if I'm doing all three of these, yeah, that can activate my brain and keep me occupied. So that's why I figured I'd do an Ironman triathlon with 6 months prep. So I went to the lab, got all my tests done, Dexcom, my body mass index, obviously, and VO2 max, FTP, lactate threshold, just a plethora of tests. And then I went to the university again 6 months later to show that I wasn't going to lose any muscle, and I didn't actually put on muscle. So I competed in an Olympic distance to get my feet wet, so to speak, and then a half Ironman. So I did the Olympic distance within about 2 months of training, did the half Ironman with about 4 months of training, and then the full Ironman with 6 months of training, and then got all my tests done to prove to people, look, you won't lose your muscle, and I didn't. However, I didn't eat like a typical marathoner or a triathlete or an endurance athlete. I ate and supplemented like a bodybuilder, and I trained like a bodybuilder to pre-fatigue my muscles before I did a lot of my endurance work, so I didn't have to go so far and so long. There were more intense sessions during the week, but then, of course, you do have to prepare yourself for the nutritional protocol, the hydration protocol, and spending time in the saddle, so to speak. So I would spend my Saturday or Sunday being comfortable, getting uncomfortable. So I would go for that 80 or 100 mile bike ride on a weekend, and maybe a 10, 12, as long as 18 mile run on the weekend as well, you know, just to get those miles in. But they would be very, very slow and steady. So that was, you know, my recovery days, if you wish. And I'd do that on when I wasn't hitting the weights.
Talk me through a sample training week. I know it progressively overloaded with the distance, but one of the things that I was so curious about, because when I heard you'd completed it and then you had documented it, and I followed through in it, I know a lot of these answers, but I'm curious to explain to the audience listening, and I highly recommend reading the book and watching the documentary afterwards. There's just so much in this. But how did your typical training look like in terms of, because you actually gained muscle, which is unbelievable when you see that test at the end. What did a typical training day look like in terms of the split? So you kept obviously the bodybuilding work and added it in. What kind of, how many days were you doing? What kind of volume were you doing? And what did your kind of typical training day look like over the space of, I know it changed over the months, but kind of talk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So I pulled my weight training workouts from my usual 5 or 6 days a week to 4 days a week because I didn't want to overtrain. I also brought my volume down as well. So typically I'm a very, very high volume trainer with about 50 repetitions. You know, if you followed my DTP, as you said you had, Brian, then you know it's a lot of volume, a lot of intensity. So I knew that I'd likely overtrain with that amount of volume. And it wasn't until I actually started doing it that did I realize it. So, you know, I was learning by error because nobody had kind of done this before. So what I did was I'd hit like your typical legs and shoulders, back and biceps, chest and triceps, and throw abs and calves in there over the 4 day period. So it'd be like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off, Thursday, Friday, weekends off. But I'd be doing some form of cardiovascular exercise pretty much every single day. So the workouts that were typically bodybuilding workouts would change where, let's say if I'm doing squats, I would actually do squats on a Bosu ball or something like that. And even though I got a lot of hate online because here I am, hardcore bodybuilder on a Bosu ball squatting with my ankles shaking all over the place, it worked tremendously for me because I have very, very skinny ankles. I've torn a tendons in my ankle 7 or 8 times now. I've broken my ankles. And, if you're very heavy on the upper body, your foundation can be comparatively weaker. So I did a lot of unilateral work as well. So, you know, single leg, like pistol squats and single leg RDLs. I'd do a lot of stability work. So I'd either be like on a balance board or something like that just to help with the strength of my knees, my hips, my ankles, etc. And I would generally pre-fatigue that before my cardiovascular exercise that would follow immediately post-workout. So let's say I've got a crazy leg day. I would then follow that leg workout with a run. And by doing that, or some hill sprints or something, I wouldn't have to run the typical 10 or 12 miles as some of these Ironman triathletes do. I'd only have to run maybe 6 miles or 5 miles because I pre-fatigued my legs. So it helped condition my legs for the pain to come, because a lot of people would do legs and go, God, forget that. I'm not going to do cardio now, where I'd go the opposite way. And, of course, the first half a mile or a mile is very painful. But then after that, you know, you get the blood flow into the scar tissue, the connective tissue, the synovial fluid into the joints, and you start kind of warming up. And I'd do that with every body part. So whatever body part, let's say if I'm hitting lats and I'm hitting triceps, then I'm going to go and hit some intervals in the pool, because those are the muscles that are helping me drag and pull with my stroke. And, you know, so that's kind of how the workout would, you know, I'm giving you a very vague idea because it's a very good descriptive workout. But that's pretty much how it would work. And then on the days off from weights, say the Wednesday and the Saturday and the Sunday, those would be more my recovery days. And when I say recovery, with my cardiovascular exercise, I'm not hitting intervals, I'm not hitting heel sprints, I'm not taking a route on my bike that I know is very hilly, because I knew that the track that I was going to ride at Coeur d'Alene was a very, very hilly course, very, very hilly. So I would make sure that I wasn't pretty much cycling on any flats. But on the times that I'm going far, long, and using that as a recovery ride, I'll try to take a flat route whenever possible, you know, just to get some recovery, because I'm not training like a typical triathlete and not doing that much strength training. I was doing quite a lot of strength training. You know, the biggest difference, I'd say, which can dictate, you know, healing that performance and being successful, is going to be your food and supplementation. Because I was going out with a lot of triathletes that are very, very good, and they were eating a couple of little bars and a little gels, but I had to have a backpack full of food basically to facilitate the metabolic burn, particularly if I'm going to hit a hilly course or a hilly road, if there was headwinds. And, you know, I would look at my wattage in comparison to what the other riders were putting out, or the runners. And, you know, my wattage was always through the roof based on my body weight being, you know, 220 pounds. So there's a lot of considerations to take in. And, you know, thankfully, I stayed injury free pretty much for the most part, and got hooked in it since then, and done a few more since then.
What did your nutrition look like out on the courses? So when you were training, not so much during the actual Ironman event, we can get to that, but in terms of those longer cycles or those runs, and you mentioned you'd have a backpack full of food, and we'll delve into your overall nutrition, because I know you did that very differently to traditional Ironman athletes. What did your kind of snacks or foods look like during actual longer distance training sessions, or like the quote-unquote recovery sessions, the Ironman specific sessions?
Sure. So, you know, obviously I wouldn't eat during my swim. I would have a shake there just to stay hydrated, you know, with the electrolytes in, and some glutamine. But beforehand, you know, what I try to do in my training is a little bit different to what I do actually on the day of the event. I try to do a lot of it fasted and get my body a little bit more used to being fat adaptive. And, you know, if I could go through the suffering a little bit more during my training and had the comfort of some calories on the day, then my body would be a little bit more adaptive to taking in those calories and storing, as opposed to burning through, because I knew that the day of the race is going to be extremely hot, extremely hilly. And you have to take into account that, you know, you're going to have nerves, you're going to be anxious, so you're going to go through some calories then. But what I generally do is, if I was going to go to the pool, I'd go there fasted and, you know, just hydrate myself through it. I would be particular to choose more liquid fuel when I was running, and choose more solid fuel when I was cycling, because obviously your stomach is going to be a lot more acceptable of liquid, you know, when you're running and you're jarring yourself up and down, and when you're trying to breathe heavily, as opposed to having something solid. So fortunately, my fiance came up with these great like energy balls, and within these energy balls, they would be made up of dates. So I'd get some good glycogen there, a little bit of fiber. I don't have my stomach's pretty much bulletproof. It can take anything, you know. So I know some people can't take that much fiber while they're out there, because they may find themselves having to take toilet breaks. But I'm pretty good with that. So the dates would actually bind these balls together and give me carbohydrates and fiber. And then we'd put some nuts in there, and to make sure that we got some good fats there. Then we would have oats. So there's some good complex carbohydrates. And then, you know, I'd have some natural anti-inflammatories, you know, like turmeric put in there. Used to have some cinnamon in there as well. And then like a protein powder. So I'd have a whey protein isolate put in there as well. So then I'm pretty much having all the nutrients that I require to keep me anti-catabolic, to give me glycogen, and to give me some fats as well there, because obviously we want to slow down the release of those carbohydrates to a certain degree as well. A lot of people generally go towards very fast digesting carbs, but I think as long as you've loaded yourself, your glycogen from in your liver and in your muscles is going to be sufficient to deliver that, as long as your carb, you know, you have plenty of glycogen in your system to begin with. So I didn't really go for that many fast digesting carbs other than the dates, really. I'd add salt in there as well. So I'd have either some kelp salt, or there's a company called Redmond that has real salt that is mined in Utah here. So it's not exposed to any contaminants that you can find in sea salt. And so that'd be pretty much the balls that I'd have. And then there's a company that I use over here in the US called Nutrition Solutions. And they're a food delivery company, and they make some protein pancakes. And they were making some protein pancakes with my own whey protein isolate in there. So I was having them on the go as well. So they'd be made up of protein. They'd have some like oat flour in there and some nuts, maybe some fruits in there, you know, like blueberries. And I'd be pretty good to go on those as well. And then there's a company as well that does a bar. And it's called the Picky Bar, and it's all completely natural ingredients. So I was eating them a lot of the time as well. And the fluid on my bike that I would have and in my bottles that when I'm running were made up mostly of the carbohydrate coming from Vitargo. So Vitargo is a very fast digesting carbohydrate that I've used for many, many years. I don't use it in weight training now. I haven't done for probably about 8-10 years. But I do now when I'm doing long distance work, when I do want to replenish the glycogen to make sure that I don't bonk or hit that wall. So, you know, the handprint of Vitargo is very unique, and the permeability and the digestibility is just off the charts. So I can run and absorb these carbohydrates without any problem because I'm not requiring that much blood in my stomach to absorb it. And then I would have that with a whey protein isolate mixed in there as well. So those two very light digesting proteins and carbohydrates were perfect in the bottles. And if I didn't have them in there, then I would have branched chain amino acids and this product that I have called HydroCharge, which is electrolytes and antioxidants to keep me hydrated and help ward off a lot of the free radical damage that I'd be enduring. And before and after that, you know, it's going to be my typical bodybuilding meals. You know, that's going to be your rice, your chicken, or your steak, along with your avocados, your healthy fats. So the bodybuilding style meals still stayed intact. I would just be adding this on top of those meals to facilitate that extra calorific burn that I'd be enduring when I was doing all that cardio. So, you know, when I did this program, I didn't lose any body fat as people thought I would, really. I did lose a couple of percent, I think, but, you know, it wasn't really anything noticeable because I was just trying to, you know, put on muscle during this time. That was the goal, and stay injury free.
Yeah. And it's, again, the achievement in itself. It's funny, we have a mutual friend, Ross Edgley, who's actually written what Chris has done is truly pioneering on the back of his book. And Ross has been on the podcast a couple of times, and he speaks about the advantage of bigger guys, and I would put myself, yourself, Ross, into that bracket, that, you know, our ability to utilize fat, muscle glycogen, because we have muscle, can sometimes be an advantage over people who have to consistently take on gels, you know, every 20 minutes because they're significantly skinnier or leaner. So it's a real turnaround, a negative to a positive, and try and make it work for you. What would your overall nutrition look like then in terms of the typical bodybuilder? Did you keep a 3 to 6 meal a day? Were you tracking calories? Were you tracking macros? Were you just intuitively eating bodybuilder style? What did your overall nutrition look like outside of that?
I was pretty much looking at it intuitively. You know, I've been following this lifestyle now for about 20 years, and I just eyeball everything. You know, when it came to my bodybuilding meals, yeah, I was eating my usual six meals a day. And, you know, that's what I typically do when I'm trying to build muscle. I'm not trying to build muscle at the moment, so I'll do a lot of fasting. Sometimes I'll only eat three meals. But, you know, that's me right now. But obviously trying to facilitate this training, this calorific burn, which was is crazy. So it was like, you know, as you hear people say, it's like a traveling buffet when you're out there cycling and running. You're just eating all the time. It's a pain in the butt, you know, but it's something that you have to do. But yeah, I was in the beginning, I would start measuring my calories, and I was measuring how much hydration I needed. And that was dependent on the type of course I was going out on, whether that be the run or the cycle, the elevation, the headwind, the heat, because sometimes I'd need a lot more hydration on those days and that temperature than I would any other time. So I was taking that into account. But, you know, it becomes second nature in the end, and I just go intuitively. You know, I like to learn by my mistakes. So a couple of times I just went out there until I bonked, you know, until I got lightheaded. You know, I remember the one time I did a brick session. So I did my ride and followed that only with a 3 mile run. And 1 mile into the run, and I was just running to a cafe to meet my fiance to get this breakfast burrito that I absolutely love. And at a local place here. And I was 1 mile into that run, and I just hit a wall. You know, so I was walking and I was so lightheaded. Only just managed to get myself to the cafe. You know, I felt like I was going to pass out. But then that gave me an indication, okay, that's my limit. And you don't know really how far to push it until you've reached your limits. So I purposely, pulled my calories back on some of those days just to figure out where my limits were. And then, you know, I'd kind of build upon from there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, because a lot of it is, when you know your body as well as you, it's intuitively, right, do I need more food? Can I pull it back today? How am I feeling? In terms of recovery, Chris, I know your bike rides, and in terms of you did a lot of active recovery, what other recovery methods or protocols did you follow? Because you were doing so much volume, and I know it's not your traditional bodybuilding volume, but in terms of the everyday person who would be training for Ironman, you were doing considerably more weight training on top of all the endurance work. Did you have any other stretching protocols? Did you do yoga, Pilates? Were you in the sauna? Were you using ice? Was there any other things that you used regularly that you found benefited your recovery?
Yeah, so this is where, you know, some of the, you know, quote unquote biohacks come in. Of course I was stretching, a little bit of foam roller work, a little bit of massage, but I wasn't doing so much yoga. I was doing a little bit, not a huge amount. Because, you know, a lot of your time is taken up with the weight training and cardio and your business. It's like, okay, something's got to give. So I was definitely using a lot of ice, heat, and cryotherapy. That really works. So there's a company here that I called Active Health and Wellness, or Boise Cryo, and I'd go and use their cryotherapy unit several times a week. So, you know, that would put me like 240 below for about 3 minutes, and it helped just shut down a lot of the inflammation. They also have like a hyperbaric oxygen, and I was using a little bit of that. So they actually have like an O2 oxygen where you go on a bike and you're sucking in the oxygen just to saturate your cells a little bit. I'd do that sometimes before some of my sessions, and I just found it helped me recover a little bit. I would do sauna. So I've got an infrared sauna here at home. So I would use that and then follow that up with like an ice bath. So it was my legs more than anything that I found problems with recovery, because it didn't matter how many amino acids that I took in, or how much protein, or how much stretching or magnesium I'd take in. You know, they were just constantly aching all the time because of my leg workouts, and then the runs and the sprints and, you know, cycle sessions. It was just a big shock. Because, you know, I'm far from an athlete, or, you know, wasn't an athlete at that point. You know, I'd swim one length and I was knackered because it wasn't so much that I was unfit, I just had no technique. You know, we all assume we know how to run because we've been running or walking all of our lives, and I found it further from the truth. So, you know, when I actually got my technique down and started focusing on being smoother with my runs and being conscious as opposed to listening to headphones, listening to my breath, I just found my recovery came into place a little bit better then as well. And focusing on my sleep, because I've always, you know, been a terrible sleeper. So I'd only sleep like 3 hours a night and just pat myself on the back for being a warrior, if that makes sense. Yeah. And it was stupid, really. So I really started focusing on my sleep, wearing like my blue light blocking glasses, making sure I was staying away from a lot of, you know, artificial blue light a couple of hours before bed so I could help release my natural melatonin levels, get myself a lot of far and near infrared light during the day as well. If I didn't get it from the sun because I wasn't able to get outside, I'd get it from my infrared panels that I had indoors. So I was kind of hacking my environment a little bit. And I found that really helped with my recovery. As indirect as a lot of that sounds, it definitely had a direct correlation because I quantify everything. You know, as I'm speaking to you right now, I've got a bio strap on, I've got my Aura ring on, I'm usually got my Garmin on. So I'm quantifying everything to see what has a positive and negative effect. And of course, you know, trying to stay away from any food that isn't humane, humane raised or wild caught or grass fed or organic. I found that had a profound effect as well, because when you're trying to eat a lot of this food whilst you're running, cycling, or performing in some sort of activity, it can really have an inflammatory response on your gut. So you have to be very, very careful what you put in your stomach and make sure that your probiotic flora, your opportunist flora, is the healthiest it can possibly be. So it'll absorb those nutrients that much more. And I was just thinking how I can become more efficient with the absorption of the foods. Because a lot of people have food you know, problems. Like if you look at Mark Allen, who won Ironman World titles, I think, God, how many times? Six times, was it? Or eight times? I can't remember now, but it was many, many times. Out of all of his Ironman World Championships, I think it was only two of them he didn't throw up, because you know you have a hard time with digestion. So as soon as I got that down as well, that made a huge help with my recovery.
How's your sleep now? Did it the lessons you learned kind of in preparation for the Ironman, has that carried over now to an improvement in sleep?
Well, I'm always having to work on it. You know, I'm up to about 6 hours, you know, if I've had a good night. I've pretty much doubled it. I've been working on it since 2014. I went to a sleep clinic in Oldsmar, Florida, or one of the best clinics in the world, with Dr. Spanaug, and because we found out that I had mold toxicity sensitivity. Because I couldn't figure out why I couldn't sleep, because I'd never had this issue when I was younger, and I was just getting worse and worse, and it'd get to the extent that I'd dread going to bed, because I would go to bed at like my usual 9:30, but I'd wake up every 20 minutes as if it's like 5 o'clock in the morning and think, oh, it's time to get up. Oh, I've only been in bed for 20 minutes. And it was like that every night, and I'd absolutely hate it. And I tried every alternative you could think of, natural supplementation, every hack you could think of. And my last resort was to go to this clinic. And I say it's my last resort because it was bloody expensive to go to, you know. And I thought, God, this is a lot of money if this doesn't work. And fortunately, you know, within the first day, I had like 62 blood tests, had a brain fry scan, stool samples, urine samples, saliva, everything. And then within a week, we had a global picture of what was going on. And I picked up like mold toxicity sensitivity. And it looked like it came from when I was living in India, in Mumbai, because it's very humid and I was staying in an apartment there. And a lot of molds are just not visual. You don't see them. And, you know, there's a lot of molds in our environment within, especially in the U.S., so within our coffee, there can be mold spores, and same within your grains or your wine or your chocolate, and obviously within your environment in your home. So when we realized that, I went through a very vigorous detoxification system while I was there for 6 weeks, and kind of continued since then, and really worked on it during the time when I was getting ready for the Ironman, because I was putting my body through so much. I needed that sleep to recover. And so I continue to work on it to this day. So whilst I've been talking to you, I've been in front of my Juve infrared panels with my blue light blocking glasses on, and did my yoga and meditation this morning, and I'll continue to hack it during the night as well. Try not to expose myself to any electrical device or Wi-Fi or blue light or anything like that before bed, and don't have any alcohol or anything made up of sugar. So I'm always working on it.
Yeah, I'm very interested in that particular topic as well, as someone that is similar to you, not quite to the level or extremity of 3 hours of sleep, but if I don't look after and kind of biohack everything, like, I can forget about a good night's sleep. Like, I literally have to do everything you mentioned there. To bring it back to the Ironman, I'm curious, and I was going to ask this, but we kind of went to the direction of sleep. Was there any of the three disciplines that you were worried about beforehand, the swim, the cycle, or the run? Was there any that, like, you had a little bit of anxiety towards or were worried about, either because of your technique or the distance or for whatever reason? Or was it a case of you weren't worried about any of them, or you were worried about all three?
The two were the swim and the run, for two different reasons, because I wasn't a good swimmer. Like I said, I think I swam two lengths the first time. I went swimming at the start of this video series, and I literally couldn't go any further. You know, I was absolutely knackered. And it wasn't so much because that I was unfit, I just didn't have the technique. And that's what I tell people. It all comes down to technique at the end of the day. If you get your technique down, you can pace yourself and you can swim for miles. So that was, you know, I just really needed to work hard. You know, I would look at everything online. I would ask a lot of questions. I picked up an instructor here that helped me for a few sessions. You know, anything that I could get hold of. I am kind of obsessive by nature. So I threw out all the bodybuilding books and magazines during that time and picked up every single triathlete and swimming magazine and online subscription that you could think of, and just absorbed it all just to help with my swimming technique, and do a lot of interval sessions and stuff like that. And of course, you're going to think, okay, you're jumping into the ocean or a lake with a couple of thousand people, you're likely to get hit or punched or kicked, but I kind of expected that, so I wasn't too worried about that. I definitely couldn't use my size to muscle my way through, that's for sure. I definitely felt weak amongst the rest of the guys out there. And the other thing was the run, and that was mainly because I wanted to prevent injury. I knew I wasn't going to get injured in the water. I knew I wasn't going to get injured on the bike unless someone knocked me off. It was going to be the run, if anything, because of, like I said, the issues that I've got being about 220 pounds of just hitting 5'8" with small joints. You know, I've got my father's strength and my mother's, bone structure, which doesn't work out well at all. So I was very particular about that, because I think it was within the first week I sprained my ankle. It wasn't severe, but I sprained my ankle just running on the trails, because obviously you're running over roots and ruts and stones and things like that, and you have to be completely present the whole time. And that's very common for me. I'd be out running on the streets and with my client, and Tim, the tendons in my ankles, they'd just twist, because my feet evert very, very easily. So I was very conscious of that, and that's why I did all those quote-unquote silly things of squatting on a Bosu ball, doing lunges on a Bosu ball, doing a lot of ankle rotations and flexions, and spending a lot of time like on a tennis ball, rolling my feet out, rolling the metatarsals in my feet, and on a golf ball and things like that, just to ensure that I didn't injure myself. You know, I wasn't too focused on seeing how fast I could do this Ironman, because I knew all the people that were watching this video series, which was pretty much being published in real time. They didn't care if I finished this thing in 7 hours or 8 hours. they cared if I finished or not, you know. So that was just the goal. I need to finish this thing and stay injury free. So those are my two things that I was a little bit conscious of. And, you know, everybody is worried about the swim. You know, I don't think there's anybody that has come up to me and said, hey, I'm thinking about doing a triathlon, but I'm really looking forward to the swim. You know, they all say, I am so paranoid about the swim. I'm like, yeah, what's new? Everyone says the same.
Yeah, it's so true. I particularly liked, actually, one of my favorite sections from the when you're documenting on video was when you were doing the Bosu ball squats and you're like, oh, I'm going to get so much hate online for this. I burst out laughing because, like, you did it. It was in the video clip and then you commented on it. And I'm like, well, you've just taken away all the firepower that anyone was going to throw at you.
Believe me, though, they came up with it. They came up with it. I was getting a lot of it, but I expected it. You know, who cares?
It is what it is. Like, people online are going to have their comments. Chris, talk us through the day. How are you feeling coming into the actual Ironman? And what did your process look like for the day in terms of your meal structure, what you had on the day, and how you found the actual event?
Yeah, I was pretty calm on the day. We found a real nice Airbnb out in Coeur d'Alene, away from the town where the event was being placed. So, you know, we were in the countryside. It was great. And my parents had come over from Wales to visit. So that was pretty cool. I liked that because Dad was always with me when I was competing in motocross for many, many years across the UK. And so I felt comfortable having him there more than anything. And so I was pretty chilled out, relaxed, woke up very, very early, probably about 3 a.m. And that's when I started the nutritional protocol, really, because I continued to eat as normal the day before, which was a lot of calories, but woke up very early and had like several cups of oats with, protein powder, had nuts, had lots of fruit in there, and just filled that bad boy bowl up. You know, big time, just had a lot of food there. And I made sure that I gave myself that gut bomb, if you wish, probably about 2 hours before the event. Like, I digest pretty quickly, so I wasn't worried about having too much in my system. And then literally about 5 minutes before the swim, I knocked back a banana before going into the swim. But, you know, I was just, I wasn't really nervous. I was pretty calm. I was pretty chilled. And just try to be present more than anything. And so then the swim started, and I did have a gel in my hat. I had a gel in my hat, and this is a gel. I can't remember the name of it, but it has all, you know, natural flavors, colors, etc. And so when we actually did, you know, one of the laps in the lake, you actually come out onto the embankment, run outside of a cone, and then go back in. So I figured, okay, when I come outside of that cone, I'll take that gel out of my cap, eat it, and go straight back in. So that's what I did when it came to the swim. And more than anything, I just try to stay focused and present, because it's very easy when you're out there for that amount of time during the day that you get distracted. You start thinking about stressing about things, worrying about things, thinking about what happened last year. And I tried to just stay as present as I possibly could and just pace myself. So keep in mind that I did the half Ironman. So I actually wrote down all the times that I did in the half Ironman on that same course. I wrote it on my hand. So I knew that I needed to double that plus add some more time on it just to pace myself. Because like I said, when you've got that many people there, you've got now the cameras rolling as well, because bodybuilding.com, where they're filming, my parents are there, my fiance is there, you know, there's a lot of pressure for you to kick ass and do well, and I'm very competitive. So I didn't want to get into that mental alignment. I want to just focus and lower my blood pressure and pace myself just to ensure that I finished. Because if I went too hard, again, there's that possibility that your leg seize up, you cramp up, or you just, you know, you bonk, you hit that wall. And I didn't want that to happen. So I just took my time and just enjoyed the journey and the encouragement from the people and getting that positive vibration from others that, you know, have never met you before, but they're shouting you by your name. and pushing you, because there was a few people that kind of recognized me, knew who I was. So that was good. And you'd also get encouragement from people actually racing as well. And they'd make, you know, some funny remark because, you know, they're looking at the size of your carbs as they overtake you or something like that. But, you know, I really like the camaraderie that everyone's really encouraging you, even though that you're racing each other. And I think it's probably one of the only sports that the professionals and the age groupers are all racing, you know, at the same time on the same course. So that's pretty cool just to see the animals that are out there as well, just not just trying to finish this thing, but just trying to race it at the same time. And there's a few people that were racing there that I knew from Boise here. One of the guys is a personal trainer called Kenny McDaniel in the gym that I train out at. And, you know, that guy's an absolute beast as well. And just watching those guys out there was very encouraging too, just to see, you know, the difference in the abilities in the athletes out there is just phenomenal.
You mentioned they're trying to focus on being really present in the moment. And there's obviously several benefits to that, you know, in terms of injury prevention, etc. What's your process for that? How do you control your mindset, or how do you control your thoughts to stay on the present moment when you've got to cover that kind of distance in an Ironman triathlon?
Well, it's something that I'm still working on. It's just keep focusing on your breath, because, you know, I guess we're trained to be distracted these days. So, you know, what we were like 20, 15 years ago, where now we have everything at our fingertips. We can order from Amazon. We can interact with people on various social platforms. We scroll through platforms and we have conference calls. We have these Skype calls, these podcasts. So we're in a constant mode of distraction. So we're trained to not be present. So the only thing that I feel that we're, you know, our first breath and our last breath and everything in between comes from our breath. So, you know, it may sound cliche. You always hear people say, focus on the breath. But no one really actually listens to that. Maybe they hear it and they don't listen to it. But I find that is the perfect regulator to bring you back. You know, because there's a lot of things that we can think about out there, whether that's a good thought or a bad thought. I just wanted to be present by focusing on the breath. So if I got distracted, I'd bring myself to the breath. Of course, there was times that I needed to be a little bit distracted when my legs were killing me, when I'm on the run, and I'm just looking at that next lamppost or that next sign or that next corner or that next aid station to run to before I think about walking, and then I try to find that next thing to continue running before thinking about walking, you know. So then you'd have to kind of distract yourself when needed, because otherwise sometimes when you're a little bit too present, you'd find your pace would slow down a little bit too much, you know, so then you'd have to kind of distract yourself again on the actual race.
What was your feeling at the end when you crossed the finish line?
Phenomenal. It was absolutely phenomenal. It was a lot of relief, I guess, to begin with, because, like I said, my parents were there, and everyone was there to celebrate. But it was very short lived, and this is kind of why I did give up like bodybuilding and a lot of other sports that I competed in. I competed in downhill mountain biking after motocross, is because what I found that, you know, the day of the finish was probably like the worst day, or at least the day following, because you put so much time and effort and discipline and scheduling into this thing, into this itch that you're trying to scratch. And then when that scratch is gone, it's like now you've got nothing to itch. So there's no focus because there's less discipline, there's less scheduling. And I like that. I'm a person of numbers. I like that punctuality and that accountability. And when that is gone and you've lost yourself into this abyss, I can fall into a bit of a depression for a while. You know, I like to have something to move on, to focus on all the time. And I find it very hard to celebrate when I do get a win out of anything, whether that be in a career or whether it be in life or a sporting endeavor. So I find that very hard to deal with. So unfortunately, those celebrations are short-lived. There was a lot of relief that I did finish, obviously. I think the first thing on my mind was just food. I just wanted to eat more than anything. And unfortunately, at a lot of these Ironman events or any endurance events is just a lot of bad food. So I just wanted to find myself a restaurant and eat some proper food.
Yeah, I connected so much with that in the book and in the documentary about the, you talked a little bit about falling into that abyss at the end of, you know, you, everything is geared towards this particular date, this particular event. I used to get the same thing when I competed in bodybuilding and the same thing with ultra endurance. That's why, similar to you, I always have to have the next goal lined up before I finish whatever race it is that I've set up for myself or whatever event that I'm targeting. If you could go back, would you do anything differently in your training, in your prep, in any area of it? Would you do anything differently if you were to do it all again from scratch?
No, I don't think I would, because, you know, I think you learn a lot by your mistakes, and I like to make mistakes to learn upon them. So I don't think I would have done anything. You know, who knows? You know, I don't know if I could shave off any more time from that. You know, I definitely gave it all I got. The one thing that I probably would have done differently is not run so quick straight away. Because the thing is, when you've been cycling for that many hours, you're used to going at a certain speed. So then when you start running, it seems abnormally slow. However, you should also stick to that pace because you've got a long way to run now. You've got to run a full marathon. But it feels a little bit odd doing so. And when you're in the town and you're getting so much encouragement and you see your parents there and you see your fiance there, it's like, I don't want to look like a dick. I want to look fast, you know, chest out, posture, like, it's okay. I'm not hurting. I'm a warrior. When, you know, it's okay to show a little bit of weakness and slow things down and then maybe pick up the pace towards the end. So I felt I went a little bit too hard to begin with, which led to me walking a little bit more than I should have through the aid stations. So that's probably the big thing that I would have changed. Other than that, I wouldn't have changed a thing, man. I loved it. You know, when I reflect upon it now, I have a lot of good memories.
I'd be remiss to not ask this question as someone that's followed you for years. What did you find more difficult, your first prep for a bodybuilding show or the first prep for the Ironman?
Our first prep for the Ironman, for sure. The first prep for my bodybuilding show was like 8 weeks. I was hallucinating because I went zero carbs for those 8 weeks because I didn't know anything different. But yeah, and I think, as you know, that was like over 20 years ago. As you get a little bit older, it's a little bit harder to continue to wrap your head around these things and just drive forward. And so the Ironman, for sure. And that's what I absolutely love now. You know, I love that people come up to me at expos and say, hey, I did this bodybuilding show after following your program. And that gives me a lot of pleasure. But now when people come up to me with their Ironman medals or anything like that and say, I completed this because of this program, that gives me so much joy because I know that they went through hell and back to get ready for that thing. You can't fake that. You know, unfortunately, and I'm not, you know, being condescending when I say this, anybody can do a bodybuilding show. It's not as if you have to go through a vetting process where they say, you're not good enough to stand up here. We'll come back next year. But you can't do that with an ultra marathon or an Ironman. You have to put in the work in order for you not to be a DNF. You have to finish, you know, you can't fake that. So that gives me a lot of pleasure.
Yeah, it's such a great point. And for everybody listening, I'm going to be linking all these up in the show notes anyways. And I was saying to you, Chris, just before we went on air, like, it's not even Ironman. Like, I literally recommended your book to a marathon runner last week. He was like, I want to keep my muscle while I'm building, you know, when I'm training for a marathon run. I was like, go buy Chris's book. I was like, he talks about Ironman, but the idea and the principle of, this is how you maintain size. This is how you train for endurance. This is how you combine it to become a hybrid athlete. Like, I'm just so grateful that you documented that journey. You put that message out there. You put it into the book, Chris. And just as a fan of someone who's been following your work for years, I just want to say a massive thank you for putting that out there, because it just gets rid of all those limitations that you have to pick one over the other. You know, you're similar to Ross Edgley, similar to, you know, I can't think of anybody else pioneering that this is how you do it all. This is how you become a hybrid athlete. And I just think it's the greatest thing ever for people to follow. So thank you so much for doing it.
No, I appreciate your kind words. And yeah, there are a few other people out there that are pioneering it, you know, like Alex Viada, who helped me during some of this process as well. you know, the guy's an absolute freak. He deadlifts ungodly amount of weight, drinks some beers, and then goes out for like a 15, 20 mile run, you know. And then you got people like Ashley Horner as well. That's a kind of the hybrid athletes in the female world. And obviously you've got the, you know, amazing CrossFitters as well. But I think actually, like you said, documenting the process for some people that have had this stigma in their head, okay, I weight train, I can't do any cardiovascular exercise. This turns that impossibility into a possibility, and it just gives them a template to follow, and vice versa. You know, if there's a lot of, I know there's a lot of endurance athletes that don't do any strength training. They don't feel that it has any benefit, or they feel they'll have to give up their endurance activities to participate in weight training, when obviously you know this, Brian, that it's just not, in fact, it's not true. There's just a lot of stigmas out there that we just have to fight against. It's not for everybody, you know, I don't claim it is, but it's for somebody. And, you know, the more content that we can put out there for people to read upon and then possibly apply, the better.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Ashley, somebody, she's down for the podcast as well. I've been chatting to her a few times on Instagram. I'm looking forward to having a proper chat with her as well.
Oh, yeah, she's an absolute animal. Like, I've been out on plenty of training sessions with her. We actually rode about 100 miles in India a couple of years ago. And, yeah, she's a phenomenal athlete. You know, she is a badass. I've always said if I was reincarnated as a female, I'd probably want to be her.
That's the ultimate compliment. Chris, I can't thank you enough again for your time, for all that you do, for documenting your journeys. Can you tell everybody listening where's the best place for them to pick up the book? Where's the best place for them to follow you online? And if there's anywhere in particular you'd like to send them to, please feel free to do that now.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, Brian. Yeah, if anybody wants to pick up the book, you can get it from Amazon. It's Man of Iron. And, you know, if you want to follow me, you can get me on Instagram. That's Chris Gethin, K-R-I-S, Gethin, G-E-T-H-I-N. And I've also got a platform, a personal platform called Health Kick, and that's spelled with K-I-K. So if people are wanting any coaching whatsoever, I do offer it on there.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, I will link all of those up in the show notes on briankeenfitness.com, and go buy this book. If you are looking to become a hybrid athlete, I've only done this with like 3 or 4 books I've ever recommended on the podcast. This is one of them. Like, go and pick it up. It's an amazing read. If you're trying to build muscle and train for endurance, this is the book to pick up. Chris, thank you so much again.
Awesome. Thank you very much. It's my pleasure, Brian. Appreciate it.
There you have it. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. Chris is one of those people that I've wanted to have on the podcast since I've started it, as someone that's been a fan of his journey for, as I mentioned, nearly the last 10 years. So if you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, please tag it on your Instagram story, and you can tag Chris Gethin on his Instagram as well. Let us know what you thought. And as always, if you're enjoying the podcast and you like what you heard, please leave a review, and I'll catch you all next week.